Welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, brought to you by the South Florida chapter of the International Coaching Federation, where our goal is to engage, motivate, and inspire. On the Coach's Corner, we speak with the great professional coaches of ICF South Florida. We hear about what compels them to coach. We talk about the people they support and the tools and techniques that they use to get the job done. Coaching is a hugely specialized craft, and this inside look at the power and the promise of coaching is both an exploration and a celebration of our member coaches, their talents, and their client successes. Hello, I'm Eric Gorris, a member of the ICF South Florida Programming Committee and host of the Coach's Corner podcast. If you're a coach, I would like to invite you to visit the ICF South Florida website so you can learn more about our chapter's benefits and program offerings. To learn more, go to icfsouthflorida.org. Check out our calendar of events, and if you find an event that interests you, register for free as our guest. Just use the promo code PODCAST. Today, we're on the line with Ernie Turner, a true pioneer in the business, a team and organizational coach who has been in the business for almost four decades. Ernie has his own school for teaching team coaching and has two books on the subject, 2023's Shared Leadership Disciplines, A Better Way to Lead and Coach, and 2013's Gentle Interventions for Team Coaching, Little Interventions That Make a Big Difference. Today, he will tell us about his coaching style, share some highly applicable coaching tools, and tell us some stories from Ernie's years on the job. Ernie Turner, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on this show today. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, let's go ahead and jump right in. What were you before you were a coach? What was your journey to coaching, and how did all that come about?
Let me take you back to 1965. I can see the handwriting on my wall. Ernie, you're on your way to Vietnam. I'm a pacifist, so I didn't want to fight. I didn't want to go to Canada. But I said, you know, Ernie, you've always wanted to fly. So if you're going to go in as a pilot. So with three of my buddies, we went to take the Navy aviation exam to fly off of aircraft carriers, either helicopters or jets. So I had been getting ready for my comprehensive exams in English literature and hadn't done all the reading I should have done. So I was staying up pretty late at night till the wee hours in the morning, and I was very tired. And this was a Saturday, and we were in the exam center, and you couldn't take exam number two if you didn't pass exam number one. And there were seven exams, and then the next day was the physical exam. So we got to exam number seven, the very end of the day, and I was exhausted. And the instructor said, you have 15 minutes to read the instructions, and then I'll let you know when you can take the exam. So I read the instructions very quickly. I said, that's easy. I got it. Took a 13-minute nap. And then she said, okay, open your exams and you can take it. I was the first one through, took it off, gave it to her. She quickly evaluated it, and she said, you didn't get one right. You got everything wrong. And I said, that proves that I must know something if I got them all wrong. Maybe just a little clip. She said, I'm sorry, you can't take the physical exam for six more months, which then meant I'm off to Vietnam as a foot soldier. However, Kennedy at the time whispered, if you join the Peace Corps, you don't have to go to Vietnam. I quickly signed up, joined the Peace Corps, ended up in Borneo, still in Southeast Asia, the other side of the South China Sea, and had three fabulous years. I look back at that 13-minute nap as the best because it gave me an opportunity to ultimately end up having this conversation with you, Eric. Two of my buddies were shot and killed, and the third had a terrible psychological reaction. He's still obsessed with what happened for good reason. What happened in Borneo for me, I was teaching elementary and junior high school. And one of the things that I got really intrigued about is the difference between teaching and learning. And it's been a continual passion for me, really helping every intervention become a learning intervention. And after 3 years in the Peace Corps, it led to going back to the United States and meeting a company called ISS, International School Services. And they were running schools around the world. So my wife and I at the time decided to teach in Angola and then Brazil and then Sardinia and Italy and then ultimately in Kenya. And so that gave me an opportunity to really try out some of the things that I was picking up in Borneo around learning and teaching. And it really got into coaching. I was doing some coaching of my students, and it gave me a new way of looking at how we can set up schools and set up learning. I got a call then from a buddy of mine who said, Ernie, you are an anthropologist educator. We need you in New York City. I've got a job you can't refuse. And I accepted it and spent 10 years with the New York Urban Coalition, actually coaching schools that were dysfunctional. So I got into coaching, actually, in New York City. And there was no, ICF wasn't around at the time, so I couldn't go on, get a shingle and say, help me learn how to be a coach. But we heard about a company called MDI, Management Development Inc. And I think it was based somewhere in Iowa. And a Jesuit priest, Joe O'Connell, came, and we hired him to help us learn how to work with teams. How do we work with disparate groups? And we learned a lot of wonderful things that we're still using today. Very simple, very practical tools, concepts. How do you take decisions? How do you plan? Things that, you know, we all do, whether we're in a business or an NGO or a school system. And so we started working with him. And then I was co-leading a group of 15 coaches and working with the 50 most dysfunctional schools in New York City across all five boroughs. So that's where I got into coaching. And after 10 years in New York City, I said, let me try out. I was asked to come to Boston and work with their most dysfunctional high schools. So some wonderful stories, a lot of challenges with high schools, with junior high schools. But just to finish your question, for the last 38 years, I've been working in the private sector, primarily with multinationals, large country national companies, and some NGOs, basically applying the whole concept that those people who have a stake must have a voice. And it's a pretty democratic principle, very easy to say, very difficult to achieve, because it's not only creating the atmosphere for being able to speak up, but providing some tools. And we've discovered some very interesting, very simple tools that I'd be happy to share with you in this conversation a little bit later for your listeners who are probably asking, well, what can I learn from this conversation today? And as I said, we're in the learning business and helping people acquire the kind of tools, concepts, principles that can really turn a situation around. So I often say, you know, I'm in the coaching business. I'm in the team coaching business. So depending on who I'm talking to, get different answers.
Ernie, thank you so much for taking us through that. That's truly a fascinating tale. And when you started with enlisting in Vietnam, I wasn't sure exactly where that was going. But the Peace Corps is a very pleasant direction. I'm happy to see it turned that way. And I might say, I'm sorry to hear about your buddies as well. That's it amazes me that we're still feeling the pain of that. Here we are this many decades later, 50 years later. If I may, going back to working with the schools and the educators, in that instance, were you working with the administrators? Were you working with the educators, the teachers? Were you working with the students themselves, all of them?
Yes. The first partnership was at the hierarchy with the Board of Education. We got to know members of the Board of Education, and then we talked to the union, and they said yes, and said then we need to work with basically schools. So we need to enter through the superintendents of the different school districts and ask them if they wanted help, and if so, to call in their principals. And then with the principals, teachers selected who they wanted to be on the team. And it became, first of all, that chain of getting into the school and then being able to sit with that team and help that team as a coach become a high-performing team. We didn't tell them what to do. We invited them to do their own dreaming, their own planning. What we provided was simple process. What we've been doing for the last 38 years is we've been working with the corporate sector, and it's transformational.
I can't help but think about the moments that change the course of our lives. For example, when Lynn gave you that call and said, Ernie, I need you here. I need you to basically go foster systemic change in the education system, right? And it's not lost on me. Two things. One, that not only did you have to sell through these services and the idea of change, but you had to sell through the idea of coaching in an era when coaching really kind of didn't exist, which I think is fascinating. And also when you talk about what it took to get the program kicked off the ground, the supervisors, the unions, the superintendents, the principals, to go all up and down that chain in the pursuit of selling through a deal or proposed solution, in terms of business development, it's very admirable.
You know, we picked up a word that is as alive then as it is today, and that's the word help. And when people ask for help, I've never seen somebody not raise their hand and say, count on me. You know, I got a note yesterday from a guy in Australia who said, Ernie, I need help. And I wrote him a note today and I said, here's how I can help. And it happened across the schools that we worked with. We said, you know, here are the schools we want to help. We want to work with the most difficult and offer your help, but we're not going to force ourselves on you. You need to say, I want it. And then we will talk about what the it is.
And this year, earlier this year, you had a book come out. It was titled Shared Leadership Disciplines. Is that right? And I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about that or take us through a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. It's actually, I'm the co-author with one of the gentlemen on our team who's leading our academy and our team coach certification program. Tan Swee Heng, wonderful individual, very talented, lives in Singapore. So he and I had been writing this book for probably the last 3 years, thinking it through and engaging our own team. Yes, the book is divided into three sections. One is the case for change. Let's understand what we're doing now. The majority of leaders in businesses everywhere are still pretty much addicted to the pyramid paradigm. You go to Farrell, who's sitting at the top, and you say, can I? And he says, yes or no. And here's how. Here's how we want you to do it, Ernie. So the pyramid paradigm is pretty much command and control. You do what I say. Now, there's variations of that. But very often, the shared leadership paradigm, which is just the opposite of that, say we certainly need to be clear on who we are, what is our purpose, what is our mission, what business are we in, the vision, where are we going, strategy, how are we going to get there, priorities, what are they for this year, targets, how do we measure them? That all needs to be there, but it doesn't have to be driven by one person. That one person can go pretty crazy if they have to do that, and then they need to look at the organization, the structure and the culture, and then they need to look at the team. How are we managing our time? What's on our agenda? What's not on our agenda? How do we plan? How do we make sure everybody is engaged? Everybody is prepared. And at the professional dimension, how do we make sure that we have the basics down, like peer learning? How do we ensure that we are learning? How do we ensure that we can give feedback, receive feedback easily, and look at it as learning, not as spanking? And at the personal dimension, how do we make sure that we get to know each other? And then the sixth dimension, which I think is critical today, is what are we doing for the planet? Individuals, as a team, and as a company. Do we really understand the dire straits that we're in? And that if we don't all come together and work together and say, you know, some of the things we're doing now, we could get put in jail for. Do we know what those are? So we can stop them. So as coaches, I think we have an opportunity around those six dimensions, business, organization, team, professional, personal, and sustainability, to really make a difference wherever we are. The whole sustainability piece is a new one that we've added the last few years, and it's really an exciting one to be in. This is where I'm going to be spending the next 10 years of my life, looking at sustainability coaching and peace coaching. How can we work in both of those fields?
And I'm so glad you brought up the sustainability. I think that's fantastic, Ernie, that is becomes the sixth pillar, sustainability. And, you know, additionally, I would like to point out your deep thinking on the methodology of coaching. There's been so much talk today of tools, methodologies, philosophies. So I want to thank you for the deep commitment to that as well.
You're welcome. You know, some of the tools that we pick up and use are ones, as I mentioned earlier, we get from our clients. And one I'll share right now, because it's so effective in the connection. Before you start talking about your business, talk about the person. Who are you anyway? What's your story? And it just turns the atmosphere around. This guy isn't here just to sell me. a coaching product, but he's here to understand who am I and to share a bit of himself. So by being vulnerable and saying, who are you? I find, you know, what are the turning points for you? How did you get here? How did I get here? If you were to go back and take just 5 minutes and identify two or three stories that were turning points in getting here, like I did with the story of Vietnam, you know, without that story, we wouldn't be here together. There's probably another four or five turning points in my life and your life that would account for that. And I was in Jeju Island in Korea, working with a regional team for Asia Pacific. So I said, let's do something where we connect everybody. So we decided to go on a hike, 2-hour walk, and do it in a way that every 7 minutes, we were walking with somebody else. So she figured out the matrix of who was walking with whom each round. So we had 13 rounds for 14 of us, and we had a walk and a talk. So we call it walk and talk. And at the end of it, we got in a huddle, and I said, how was it? They said, this is the best part of the whole workshop. And ever since then, I've been using it with every team that I've worked with, every organization. It's so simple. People in a team meeting will often sit to the person, you know, and they end up sitting in that position. And there's a person at the other end of the table that is not either in their voice path or even eye path that they often don't even connect with and don't know. But by having everybody walk with everybody for just a few minutes changes the whole atmosphere of the team. And it's a wonderful way to connect in a very natural way by taking a walk. So I just mentioned that as one of the very simple tools that you can pick up as you're working with your client. We have a toolkit of about, must be over 100 right now, that we, 15 or 20 of them we use almost every time we work with the team. But simple, easy to do, profound in terms of change.
Well, that is profound in terms of change. And, you know, again, Ernie, I love it for its efficacy and its effectiveness. I could certainly see how it works. I love it for its simplicity, which I think is admirable. The best tools are often the simplest. And also, I love the fact that it puts the power back in the hands of the clients, doesn't it? Again, it puts the problem solving to them and allows them to cross the sort of canyons they need to cross and bridge the gaps they need to bridge.
Let me take one more brief introduction of a tool that I think your audience would appreciate. It's called the moonshot. You know, it's from Kennedy and going to the moon. And I was a number of years talking to the head of MSD, once again, in the Philippines. And we were going through this list of six possibilities for outcomes. So I said, what would you like to have as an outcome at the business dimension for this workshop? And then I'll put a design together. And he said, Ernie, last year, I thought I had 100% commitment for the amount we promised to the region. We missed it by 4%. I got spanked on my wrist publicly by the head of the region, and I don't want that to ever happen again. So I would be very happy that we could walk away from this next team meeting with a full commitment from everybody that we will get to 100%. And I said, would you be happier for 110%? And he looked at me and he said, Ernie, were you listening to me? We couldn't make 100. So I'd be happy with 100. I said, were you listening to me? Would you be happier with 110? And he said, of course. I said, let's try it out. We'll call it the moonshot. So we got to the retreat center where we were working with his team. And his team had heard about session 7, which was the moonshot. And some of them were complaining, and I heard about it. So I said, look, I'm not your boss. Let's take this as a game. Let's see what we can do. I want you to do one thing, however. I want you to take 5 minutes of silence, take out your journal, and we'll first have the CFO tell us what 100% looks like. And then what we can do is figure out beyond that 100%, where might we get another 10%? And after 5 minutes, everybody was writing. There were a number of ideas on their pages. I said, take 30 more seconds. They divided into two groups. They self-facilitated, but the task was come back with a list of where you think an extra 10% might come from. They did. They presented it to the two R groups, and they came up with 115. They only delivered 107, but that was a significant amount. And the head of the region said, we're going to give you a trip to Osaka for a week, all expenses, airfare, hotel, meals for what you've done. 330 people went to Osaka. Why did they go? They went because they took 5 minutes of silence for everybody on that team to think, where do I think one part of that might come from? And why? Because of SRWR, stop, reflect, write, report. It is a game changer. And the reason is we don't realize how smart we are and how smart the team is. I knew that 5 minutes of silence times 14 is 70 minutes. That's 70 minutes of work. Little things can make a big difference.
Little things can make a huge difference. And little things, I've often said, little things over time add up to big things. So much great stuff in there. So much great stuff in there, Ernie. The emphasis on self-facilitation, absolutely. The idea that it's 5 minutes apiece across 14 people, 70 minutes, that's true. But it's also tapping the group potential of 14 different problem solvers, 14 different individual contributors in that moment. And I think that's fascinating and effective. The tool is SRWR, stop, reflect, write, report. That and other tools are, do you go into many of the tools in the book, the Shared Leadership Disciplines book?
Yes. Almost all the tools we're using today appear in one or more of the chapters. I was telling you, the first section of the book is why are we here? Why do we need a change in the leadership paradigm? Section two is in-depth dive into these five disciplines. What are some stories? A lot of stories to give examples of then introduction of the tools we use. The second or the third part of the book is on application. So where have we applied it? Where have we seen differences in sustainability? And by the way, I'm going to be having a series in ICF, South Florida, on taking a deeper dive into some of these questions, you know, coaching for peace, coaching for sustainability, looking at the basics. What are the basics? Why are we doing this anyway? How do you go from one-on-one coaching to team coaching to organization coach? I said, you've done the alignment with yourself, with your team. Now let's cross the whole organization. That's where I think a lot of excitement lies. And as coaches, if we are inspired to look at how do we move forward, I think organization coaching can become very lucrative for the company, very transformational for the company, and a lot of fun for us as coaches because there's so many moving parts. You know, that's what I like about it. There's nothing boring.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And if indeed you are doing a series of presentations at ICF South Florida, you can count on me to be there in the audience. And for those of you who are listening and aren't familiar with the incredible programming that ICF South Florida does, you really do owe it to yourself to go to icfsouthflorida.org and check out that calendar of events because programming committee and team, they do such a fantastic job of curating really incredible information sharing and knowledge transfer. So as a coach who's working or looking to work or to build skills, ICF South Florida is a tremendous resource. And, you know, you'll find you have access to amazing people like we have today, Ernie Turner, who's on the line with us. So before we get to the final question about the future of coaching, can you just please tell us, for those who need help or would like to connect with you, perhaps their organization or people within their organization could benefit from your services or what you offer, where can people find you? How can they connect with you?
I think our website is probably the best place to go to see what we do, what we offer. One of the things we offer is to help people who are interested in coaching teams to actually learn what it means to become a team coach. So you will find that information on our website. I'll give it to you. It's www.limglobal.net. limglobal.net. You can certainly reach me there, but you can see what we do, who we are, what we believe in, and you can see some of the companies that we've been working with now.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And now is also a good time to say the name of the book is Shared Leadership Disciplines, A Better Way to Lead and Coach. And that's by our guest today, Ernie Turner. And I'm sorry, your co-collaborator's name is?
Tan Swee Heng. He's very active in the Singapore ICF chapter. You know, it's really a privilege for us to be working with ICF because your outreach, number one, and your commitment, number two, to be able to make this world a better place. And I think we can all contribute. We can learn from one another. And I always run sessions in a way that I get as much, if not more, than the people who come. And for people who are interested, you also get some CCE. So join us. We're going to have a wonderful time. It'll be a conversation. I'm not going to be lecturing. I'll talk a little bit, but it'll be your questions that really drive the conversation, just like you've done today, Eric. So thank you for having me on and asking some really good questions. I think the prep was very helpful. And in our practice as coaches, being prepared is a critical success factor. So it's really understanding who's the client, what do they need, what do they want, the different questions, two different answers often, and then how can we help? So to be continued.
To be continued, indeed. And, you know, thank you for such an informative, you know, again, we mentioned knowledge transfer and the importance of that today. Thank you so much for all the insight that you have brought to the call and brought to our listeners. I can assure you that so many of our listeners are thirsty for tools and techniques and ways to be more effective. So all of that is truly appreciated. Again, the name of the book is Shared Leadership Disciplines. That's available on Amazon, so you can find that there. And then, Ernie, the last question that will get you out of here. You know, especially with AI coming around the bend or having already arrived, you know, this is such a hot topic. When you look into the crystal ball, what do you see for the future of coaching?
Well, I think it's a tool we need to understand as coaches. How can we use it, not be afraid of it? I think if we continue to learn as coaches, that learning is going to be the end game. And AI is really up to speed on learning. But there's always going to be new things, nuances that are coming up that it requires human beings to be involved, like the planet, like peace. I think show up and be there and have affect and be concerned, as you have demonstrated in this call. You know, who's Lynn anyway? You know, there are people that we're talking to and that we're working with, and they're human beings. And I think our role as coaches, we continue to be interested in the people behind the job. It's going to be very difficult to replace us. But I think we can utilize AI as a tool and say, how can I get a design, you know, more quickly, and then take a look at it and see what's missing. And we have a set of learning principles that I think is another powerful topic. What are the learning principles that allow us to make coaching a learning intervention every time? And we've got 10 principles, and I could spend another hour with you talking about each of those principles and how important it is. Reflection, for example, is one of them. And how powerful reflection is, and how do you bring it to life? And that's the key. And I think as coaches, we can think on our feet if we have the tools. And I think that's part of the preparation we need as coaches. And what are the key tools that will allow me to be an effective and fun and efficient coach? And so it's getting the basics and getting them right, and then being able to bring it to the art stage, which is really not just hitting notes, but making music. And I think that's what we as coaches need to aspire to. We need to get the notes right, but we also need to know how hard to hit them and when to hit them and put some rhythm into it and really make it into music. And I think music is a wonderful metaphor for coaching. And how do you have a jazz ensemble? I think there's some places where orchestration, being able to have a jazz ensemble where you're living in the moment, making decisions in the moment, making interventions in the moment, and knowing when to do that. And I think AI is going to have a hard time doing that. I think we as coaches can really outthink timing by looking at body language. And that's a big piece of coaching, is understanding how do you position yourself, how do you position the team so you can really maximize the engagement of everybody. And that's another word, I think. How do we get everybody engaged? How do we hear their voice?
That's really well put, Ernie. Thank you.
There's another book that it's called Gentle Interventions. And it's the text that we use in our team coach certification program to help people understand what are those interventions that as a coach I can make, when do I make them, how do I make them, and so what happens afterwards. And so as I was helping people understand what are the steps and tools and concepts to be a team coach, somebody said, Ernie, why don't you put this into a book? So I put a lot of what we were talking about in terms of the team coach certification program. We got ICF involved. This is maybe like 15 years ago now. And so I wrote this book, and it is very simple, very practical, but it talks about the 10 ARL principles. To me, the general interventions would be the basics for how do you become a team coach in the shared leadership disciplines. So where could we take it in terms of organization coaching? Well, you know, as coaches, we have to be in the learning business too. What more can I learn? How do I keep chart? And I think, you know, we all have to be white belts. We can have black belt experience and expertise, but we're never experts, hopefully. That's when we start to die, when we're experts. So having expertise is okay. Having experience is great. But being a white belt in mentality, I think, is critical for us to continue in the coaching business and keep a step ahead of AI.
Fantastic answer. And the name of that second book that Ernie just brought up is Gentle Interventions for Team Coaching, Little Interventions That Make a Big Difference, by yours truly, Ernie Turner, our guest today. Ernie, thank you. I have to say, this has been a fantastic conversation, and I've taken a tremendous amount from it, and I know the listeners will as well. I'm very much looking forward to your continued involvement with the chapter. And so from me and the team that does the podcast and all of us on the program committee and the chapter and the listeners, thank you so much for being here. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Eric.
What a great conversation. It's always so educational and inspirational to talk with colleagues and learn from their experiences. That's why it's so important to continue to collaborate with others. And that is one of the best reasons to consider working with a certified coach. Working with a certified coach opens a whole new space to learn, grow, and design your future in a way that you want it. To learn more about what coaching is and how it can help you, please visit our website at icfsouthflorida.org. There you'll find educational resources, our events calendar, and our coaches directory. We hope you'll find exactly what you're looking for, and if you like what you see, consider becoming a member. We would love to welcome you to our community. That's it for now. Thanks again for joining us in the ICF South Florida's Coach's Corner. Until next week, I'm Eric Gorris. Take care and be well.